This is the South Washington County Bulletin Podcast for March 21. I'm Managing Editor Patricia Dre Bussey. In today's show, I'll talk with School Superintendent Tom Nelson about the overhaul of the district's school attendance boundaries and the ever-growing controversy surrounding the changes. I'll also get some information from Colleen Stelmach at the Cottage Grove Area Chamber of Commerce on the Business Showcase and Home Improvement Fair coming up on Thursday. But first, here's a news summary. More than 30 underage drinkers had a headache on their hands after a party Saturday night on Lockridge Avenue in Cottage Grove, and it wasn't just because of a hangover. Police busted the party after learning about it through the social networking website Facebook. Police waited outside the party for 3 hours as they secured a search warrant and ended up citing 21 adults and 12 juveniles for underage consumption. 3 adults who furnished the alcohol were also expected to be charged. Police said they called the organizers before the party and left a voicemail recommending against inviting underage drinkers, but that they didn't take the advice. East Ridge High School teams will be known as the Raptors, a committee decided Tuesday at a public meeting. The group also chose the school's new insignia, song, and colors, navy blue and red. The school board decided Thursday that red would be the dominant color so that the new school's colors aren't too similar to Woodbury High School's dominant color, royal blue. Here's a clip from the new song. The Washington County Board debated whether to take part in a metro area quarter of a cent sales tax increase that would go toward transit at its workshop Tuesday. The transportation bill recently passed by the Minnesota legislature allows for the tax increase, but each county in the metro area gets to decide whether it wants to participate. Participating counties would have representatives on a joint powers board that would determine which projects the extra funds go toward. Some county board members were concerned because under the proposal being discussed, counties with more population would get more votes on the board. That means if all the counties joined, Washington County would have 6 votes, while Hennepin County would have 44. County Commissioner Myra Peterson said she supports the sales tax increase, saying that Washington County should at least have a seat at the table when it comes to transit. The board will likely decide whether to increase the sales tax at its April 1st meeting. For more on these stories, pick up the March 26 issue of the South Washington County Bulletin or check out our website, www.swcbulletin.com. Next, since December, task forces have been working on drawing up new attendance boundary maps for schools throughout the school district. And as the final task force nears completion, the issue is getting more attention and more contentious. Well, I'm talking with Superintendent of Schools, Tom Nelson, about the process that's going on right now to create new attendance boundaries throughout the school district in the fall of 2009. The issue is getting more and more controversial, but I suppose that's to be expected.
Well, anytime you deal with something as to where your children go to school, people tend to take notice and to want to be a part of that process, and we've had a lot of people already be involved in that, and our community's interested, and it's good that they are. It's much better than to have no interest in that. So we expect that we're going to have a lot of people show up for our public meetings, and some will be more emotional than others. But I think everybody will have an opportunity to state their case in front of the school board before any decisions are made.
The district chose to go through this process using volunteer task forces. Why did you choose to do it that way, and did you consider doing it a different way?
Well, early on, before we started the process, we had several discussions about, is there a best way to do this? And we checked with other school districts that have gone through significant boundary adjustments, because this is significant. It's elementary, middle, high school, everything. So, what we found is the people who, first of all, there's no perfect way, but the people who had a more open process, more citizen involvement, had a situation where there was a better understanding because many people in the community had been involved in the decision. I mean, we talked about from putting a plan together ourselves to working with one task force instead of an elementary, a middle, a high school. And all those ideas were rejected in terms of let's get as many people as we can involved, let's make the process as open as we can, as transparent as we can, the more people who understand all the issues. And attendance boundaries are not easy to do. And if you play with one neighborhood in one instance, all of a sudden it impacts another neighborhood someplace else. So we wanted an open, transparent process, and that's what we've had, and we're probably about a little over halfway through it right now, and it's going to continue to be that way.
One of the, like you mentioned, one of the benefits to having an open process is that anyone can get, you know, anyone can get involved, but the flip side of that is that you may have people that just want to get involved because they want, they have a very specific agenda. They want their kid to go to the school in the school, or their one neighborhood that kind of forms a faction and tries to really heavily influence the process. Did you see that happen at all in this process? And if so, kind of how?
Yeah, it will happen in any process. You've had several neighborhoods in our school district probably have bigger turnouts at the public meetings, and people have come and monitored the work of the task force. And there's always a kind of an open comment at the end of the task force meetings where they can at least tell the task force that they like their work or don't care for it all that much. But we've had that, but the task force is representative of people throughout the district. And they have developed, first of all, again, an understanding of the process. And I think the ability to not just focus on one neighborhood, but to focus on the entire district. So even though one neighborhood may be making a lot more noise than any other neighborhood in the district, I think the task force has had a way of focusing on the district as a whole. One of our task force members early on said, you know, when you get on a task force, you think, well, I'm here for my child, but now you're representing a school. And pretty soon you come to the understanding that you're representing all the kids in the district. And I think that's the way the task force have approached it. And so I think, again, they've been able to sort through the issues and I think make good decisions.
So most of the task force members, you think, were really had the best interest of everyone involved?
Absolutely. Really, absolutely. I've been at many of the task force meetings. I have the utmost respect for the way they approach their work, the level of understanding they reached in the process. Some of them we could hire to do the next boundary adjustment. They've become so knowledgeable. And their willingness to have good, frank discussions and debates and come to a consensus on the issues.
The school board gave the task forces a pretty specific set of guidelines for creating the maps. They're supposed to keep bus rides as short as possible, maximize the amount of kids that can walk to school, keep the neighborhoods together, and have similar ethnic populations of low-income students, or similar ethnic populations and similar amounts of low-income students in the schools. But sometimes these goals conflict with each other. One case that some people are pointing out is St. Paul Park kids going to East Ridge rather than Park High School in order for East Ridge to have more low-income students. So for them, it's a case of longer bus rides versus socioeconomic diversity. When that happens, how do you weigh those two goals to decide which beats out the other?
Well, first of all, the board set down, you know, six or seven criteria to give guidance to the task force as they did their work. When you watch the task force at work, sometimes they can meet one criteria better than another. And does one weigh more heavily than another? Probably not. I think one of the things I've seen is transportation has been a big factor for people, that they're trying not to make end up with a system where there's more people riding on buses than currently are today. And for the most part, they've done a wonderful job there. I think in all of the plans, there's only one of them, I think, where there's maybe 60 more kids district-wide out of 12,000 who ride today, riding at that point. The only place where, excuse me, socioeconomic or ethnic issues come into play is at the high school, because in the guidelines laid down for the task forces, the elementary task didn't have that, because you know you tend to it's housing patterns that kind of determine you know who's living around your elementary schools, because that's your closest walk and for the most part that you have. The same is true with middle schools. So in both of those, that was not a criteria. Okay. But when we asked the voters back in 2006, when we were asking about building a new high school, one of the issues that was made was that the new high school represent the school district, have a representation of the school district. And I think at that time many people looked at it and they saw most of the growth in our school district being on the east side of our school district. And most of our schools are on the west side of the school district, and people felt, well, there'll be a high school built on the east side, and because that's the newer housing, that would end up being a high school for, in quote, the rich kids. Mm-hmm. And the board basically said, no, we want the high school to represent the entire community. One of the unique things about what is happening with the task forces and the guides that the board gave them, which I think were good, is that there are three distinct plans for elementary, for middle, for high school. And the plans that are there give people choices. And I think if you look at the point you raised about St. Paul Park and Eastridge, I think two of the three plans have St. Paul Park going to Eastridge, but the third plan doesn't. Mm-hmm. So my guess is what we'll hear now when we go out to board hearings is people getting up and saying, you know, I like the red plan, but I don't like the blue and the white plan. Mm-hmm. And here are the reasons why. And I think hopefully out of the community process will come a little more direction for the board as people look at those and say, you know, this works, but we don't think this does, that the board will maybe be able to reach a decision a little easier. Drawing boundaries is difficult. When we're done, we will not please everyone in the community. It's impossible to do. There's no such thing as a perfect plan. But I think the task forces have given us, and remember, the high school task force isn't quite done yet, but the task force have given us very good options that meet the criteria. And as you stated earlier, they may meet one better in the white plan and another better in the red plan. And other than transportation, which seemed to have gone through all of them, that seemed to be the main one.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about socioeconomic diversity, because mm-hmm. that's something that, you know, we're seeing, I guess I'm seeing mostly on our article comments, especially people are kind of, there are a lot of people are saying, you know, that's not really that important. What's more important is that kids just go to wherever is closest to them and don't ride the bus across town. But I'm just curious, why is it that that educators see socioeconomic diversity as important, and the board said that they saw socioeconomic diversity at the new school as important?
Well, first of all, I think, again, I want to go back and state that because of where the new high school could be built, if you just drew a neighborhood around that, you're going to end up with a very imbalance of what the district is. The district is much bigger than that. And, you know, that's the world in which we live. It's the world in which we go to work. It's the world in which we teach kids. And when our kids graduate from school, they're going to deal in a much more diverse world than what their elementary school was or their middle school. They're going to deal with very wealthy kids and or adults and some not so wealthy. They're going to deal with blacks and browns and yellows and whites. And one of the things that I think we've not done quite as well is try and develop better understandings between people. And do we see that as a responsibility of education? Of course we do, but we also see it as a responsibility of churches and families and other places. The whole issue with the high school is attempting to develop a high school boundary that reflects the populations of South Washington County. And again, we feel that's a commitment we made when we campaigned for the high school, because I remember when I was out at 60-some meetings and I'd have people ask me, well, if you build it over on the east side, it's just going to have people that live in very nice homes going to it. And we constantly said, no, it'll represent the school district. And so that's one of the things we're trying to do here is develop balance. And balance is very difficult to define. It means different things to different people, and even inside the task force it meant different things. So again, when we get to the end, we will not have a perfect plan, but we hope we have one that is representative of the district and that that most of our people can feel good about.
What is your role in all this, and will you pick a particular plan to recommend that the board accept?
Well, up to this point, my role has been kind of monitor. We've had some very talented people here, Dave Bernardson, Mike Vogel, Barb Brown, who have worked with the task forces, but the task forces have really taken charge. This is absolutely a citizen-driven process, and it's even when it's all over, I'm going to feel good about that part of it. So I haven't, other than being at meetings and monitoring the work almost on a daily basis, I haven't been directly in charge of anything. It will go to the board now, so my role will probably change some because I have to work directly with the board as we move forward. Will I recommend a plan? That will be dependent on the school board. If they ask me to recommend a plan, then that becomes my job. They may say to me, we just as soon not have an administrative recommendation, we'll do this ourselves. And, you know, that's another option. It's something we'll probably visit with them about either on our workshop on April the 10th, or maybe they'll want to wait until the hearing process is over and then decide if they want a recommendation from us or not. So again, it's wide open at this point. The boundary process is still a work in progress, so we'll see that it goes. If I'm asked to make a recommendation, well then they're my bosses, I'll do it, but they may decide to do it themselves too.
Well, you're kind of lucky that you won't be the one having to make the decision, but if you were a school board member, how do you think that you would decide between the plans? Do you think you'd be lean more toward popular opinion or more toward just evaluating what the goals were that you provided the task force to begin with and which plan fits better?
I think it'll be difficult to understand popular opinion, because again, it may be popular to move one neighborhood in a plan, but then all of a sudden you have to dislocate another neighborhood to do that. And I may be quiet today because my neighborhood is being left alone, but if I find out down the road that it's been moved, then I won't be so quiet. So I think we're going to hear from a lot of people who say, like I said before, I don't like the red plan, I don't like the blue plan, but I like the white plan. Or I can't stand the white plan, but I can live with the red plan or the blue plan. But to just try and, it would be nice if one plan just came to the surface and it seemed to have a consensus that, yes, that's what will happen. I don't see that happening today. So if I were a board member, and I'm thankful on this occasion I'm not, but if I were, I'd go back to the criteria I set, look at the criteria. You know, some of the things are in the criteria futuristic too. You know, let's not be back doing this in 2 or 3 years. And so I'd try and weigh all those issues out. I'd try and listen to the work of the task forces and the oversight committee. We've had 500-600 people involved in this this whole process. So I would look at what the work that's been done by the community. If you bring your community in and ask them to work on something, then you best listen to what they say to you. And the community's been very involved here. So I think, and that's the way I'm sure our board would approach it, and that's certainly the way I would look at it if I were a board member.
Yeah. Well, I guess you kind of alluded to this, but a lot of the areas included in the plan, there isn't even housing there yet. It's all in the future.
Yeah, and we've worked very closely with especially the cities of Woodbury and Cottage Grove, where much of our growth is going to be in the future, even though that it's slowed to almost a halt today. Eventually that'll take off again, and you know, we've tried to leave room in certain schools to handle that growth as we go forward, so that it doesn't automatically then create a problem for a particular school. So we hope in all of the plans, although some do it better than others, to have accommodated growth well into the future.
Once the high school plan is finished with its task force processes, mm-hmm. do you foresee these plans, the plans themselves, being changed at all?
The board is the ultimate authority. So the board can decide to say we're not going to change, that the red stays the red and the blue stays the blue or the white stays the white. I'm sure some of our board members would be more comfortable with that. Others may say, well, what would happen if you moved X to Y and Y to X in one or two of the plans? And because they're going to hear things in community meetings. And remember, the board members to this point have been observers, kind of like what I have, and some of them have been very diligent about being observers, but they've not had a chance to really be involved themselves. They're going to start getting that on April 10th when we kind of go over all the plans with them before they go out to public hearing. They have the power and the right to change these. Whether or not that happens, I couldn't tell you today. A lot of that will depend on, I think, the public hearing process.
Mm-hmm. And the next step in the series, like you said, is the public hearings. Why should people show up for these hearings?
Well, again, as I stated earlier, where people's children go to school is important to them, and you know, I expect a very good turnout at all of these hearings. And you know, there are some issues in life that create a lot of emotion. This is one of them, and we understand that. You know, if we could have built new schools without changing boundaries, it would have been the best of both worlds. But that it's not to be. Anytime you're in a growing community, this is a process that you go through every so often, and it's always a painful process. But people will show up, you know, if I've had my kids at a certain school and I really like it and I like the teachers and I like the principals, but I see in one of the maps that I moved to a different school, this is their opportunity to, you know, come and say, you know, I can live with these two plans, but when you move my child someplace else, I'm not happy about that. That's the whole point of coming to the public hearings, because even though we've had, you know, 600 and some people involved here, we have 17,000 students in the district, and you know, probably, I don't know, 10,000, 11,000 families. So we've touched the surface, but barely. And now I think it'll get deeper now. So.
Yeah. Well, and aside from the public hearings, if people do have strong feelings on these plans, are there other things that they should do to communicate?
Yes. You know, we've got a whole folder already of emails that people can email the board, myself. Normally, we're all on one kind of a thing. If they hit it, it'll come to all of us. Dave Bernardson has been our lead person and has taken most of the emails. They're all printed out. They're all shared with the school board. So, you know, whatever information we've been getting is shared with the board, and all the work of this process, I think, is currently on our website. So, and we're going to post now, once the high school maps are finalized, and again, that won't happen until next Tuesday, they will be made available in every school, as well as the list of the public hearings, places, times, those types of things. Because, again, it's a process that we want to be as open as possible. We don't want anybody in the end to say, well, they never told me, they never gave me a chance to be involved. This is a process. We started a year ago almost. And it will be a full year by the time the board makes a decision. So people will have had every opportunity to be involved and to be heard. Again, does that mean that everybody will end up getting what they want in the process? Probably not. We hope we can satisfy most issues, but I know we can't satisfy all.
All right. Well, thank you again so much for talking with me about this subject, and I'm sure we might be talking about it again in the near future.
Probably more so than we want to, but yes, thank you.
Now, for a little more information on a community event that's coming up on Thursday.
I'm talking now with Coyne Stelmach, office manager at the Chamber of Commerce, about the Chamber's 5th Annual Business Showcase and Newport Home Improvement Fair planned for Thursday, March 27 at the Armory on Belden Boulevard. Now, these two events used to be separate, right?
Yes, they were.
Why did the Chamber decide to combine them this year?
Actually, the City of Newport asked to team up with it. With us, they thought we could together draw better than having two separate events. And they were kind of outgrowing the fire hall where they had it, and we were able to take up the armory. We now have the gymnasium, the cafeteria, and the main hallway that we'll be using.
Huh. So are there quite a few more businesses this year?
Last year we had 47, and this year we expect 60.
Oh, wow. Jeez. How many people typically come out for the showcase?
We estimated last year that we had about 300 come out, but we have increased our advertising this year, so we hope to beat that number.
Wow. Which businesses are new to the event this year?
We have more of the home improvement type businesses this year because of the fact that we teamed up with the Newport show. So we have Accent Design Studios, Almost Rock. We have a few new personal kind of things like a personal trainer, Bellissimo's Salon and Day Spa, Blessed Children Child Care. We have different food vendors this year than we did last year. We have Broadway Barn Grill, Carboni's, Jimmy John's, Supermom. So there'll be different food selections this year than in the past.
And does it cost anything for people to go?
No, it's free.
Why do you think, or I guess what is your pitch for why people should come out to the event?
I think people would be surprised at what businesses there are in our area that they wouldn't have to travel to a different place, especially with the high price of gas. And that is a good time to start planning spring projects. And mostly to support your local businesses.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking with me about this. And once again, the event is Thursday, March 27 at the Armory, and it runs from 4:30 to 7:30.
If you have comments on this podcast, please email them to editor@swcbulletin.com. Thanks for listening.